It's Jeff Levering for Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin. Check out that effortless horizontal window slide and the best lifetime warranties in the industry. Order by April 30th and get 0% for 48 months at PellaWI.com.
Certain restrictions apply.
Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's the Jeff Wagner Show. Come join the conversation on the Old National Bank talk and text line at 855-616-1620. Old National Bank. Get old. Now, here's WTMJ's Jeff Wagner.
Good afternoon, Wisconsin. Welcome to the show. Yes, sir. Remember, this is Black Monday. Black Monday typically, it's a term from the NFL, where the day after the football season ends, all these head coaches get fired. You know, that's it. Well, this, if you are, you're a cable news host, it's kind of Black Monday. The lesser story, I guess, is that Don Lemon, who has been nothing but controversial during 17 years at CNN, Don Lemon fired this morning, and he's unhappy about it. He's taking to Twitter saying that he's insulted by the fact that after all those years, apparently he didn't even find out directly from management. They didn't whistle him in and tell him that he was gone. And then, of course, probably the bigger news is that Tucker Carlson, who has been a mainstay at Fox News since 2009, that's when he started. He was at MSNBC for a while, and then ultimately migrated over to Fox as a contributor in 2009. And then when Bill Riley was kind of pushed out in the wake of a sexual harassment scandal, Tucker Carlson took over in 2016 and has been incredibly successful. He had supplemented, I think, Hannaway. He had passed. He had passed Hannity as being the star and kind of the face of Fox News. Was making it's I think about $35 million a year. A lot of just absolutely a lot of money. And the announcement today is they have parted ways. Here's what the announcement says: Fox News Media and Tucker Carlson have agreed to part ways. We thank him for his service to the network as a host and prior to that as a contributor. Mr. Carlson's last program was Friday, April 21st. Fox News Tonight will air live at 8 p.m. Eastern Time starting this evening as an interim show hosted by rotating Fox News personalities until a new host is named. You can tell it had to be somewhat acrimonious because he didn't get a chance to say goodbye. That's... You know, if generally speaking, if there is a soft landing to something like this, it's typically, okay, your last show is going to be in a week or 2 weeks or whatever. You get a chance to say goodbye. We'll have essentially a whole series of hosts coming in or people coming in, and we'll look back at your career and stuff. That didn't happen. He was gone, so don't know whether this had been in the works before, but Tucker Carlson gone. Now, of course, you know, nobody knows exactly what's been going on here. Tucker Carlson, of course, was one of the preeminent faces in this, the whole scandal that emerged after the coverage of the 2022 election cycle. That's where, of course, you know, you had all the Donald Trump and the, you know, Rudy Giuliani's of the world and the Sidney Powell's of the world were going on Fox News, you know, trying to spread this, oh, the election was stolen sort of thing. And, you know, Tucker Carlson, together with a couple of the other hosts, while privately not buying any of it because they're relatively smart people, publicly were, you know, going on and were touting this, maybe there's something here, etc. So Carlson has been a lightning rod, and there's no question that if the case had gone to trial, his testimony, given a number of the emails he sent and all, would have been extremely damaging to the case. Now, they ended up settling it for, what, $787 million, et cetera. And there are some other lawsuits that are still out there, although I think the best defamation case was the one that Dominion had. But for whatever reason, whether it was Fox deciding it's just time to move on, we need to kind of rebrand the network with different faces, or whether it was Fox going to Tucker Carlson and telling him, hey, we're going to put the leash on. We're going to, you know, you're not going to have as much freedom moving forward because, well, we just settled a case for $787 million. And Carlson deciding, no, I'm not going to play by those limitations. I'm used to doing my show my way. And if you're not going to let me do my show my way, I'm going to move on. So you don't, or maybe there's a little bit of both of that. So you don't exactly know what it was that happened in this regard, but Tucker Carlson out. So, you know, Charlie, what do you think? I mean, is this one where I get on the phone with my agent and have him call, you know, have him call Fox News and say, hey, you're looking for an interim host? Got this guy in Milwaukee. You know, he did TV for 6 or 7 years. And, you know, maybe, you know, relocate. You could come with me. That would be part of the deal. You get to go to New York.
Oh, yeah. If I'll go with you, I'll go with you.
All right. There you go.
Just don't leave me behind.
No, that's part of the deal. And I don't need $35 million. I mean, I tell you what, it's like I say, maybe it's well, why don't we start with $5 million? That's okay. $5 million and, you know, we'll bring you along and stuff. I don't know how they're going to settle this, but it is sort of interesting because Tucker Carlson for the last several years has been the face of Fox News. But Bill O'Reilly was the face of Fox News. And he, you know, a week after he got blown out and he disappeared from the air. Well, you know, Tucker Carlson took his place. So, from the perspective of personalities, and personalities are clearly important and people tune in to see them. But I guess my question is this going to change anything? Will people stop watching Fox News because Tucker Carlson is no longer the person presenting the content? Our number is 855-616-1620. That's the old National Bank talk and text line. And, of course, Don Lemon blown out at CNN. That story is a little bit different because Don Lemon was having all sorts of problems getting along with his coworkers, and there was all these claims of misogyny and stuff. But Lemon was nowhere near as popular. They moved him to a morning show on CNN that was just tanking in the ratings. Tucker Carlson remains incredibly, incredibly popular. So my question is his departure going to hurt Fox News? If you are a Fox News fan, are you less likely to watch Fox News now that Tucker Carlson is not going to be associated with the network? 855-616-1620. That's the old National Bank talk and text line. We discuss in a moment. If you are just tuning in, the breaking news today, Don Lemon out at CNN. Probably the bigger news is that Tucker Carlson, who had the top-rated show on Fox News, he is out as well. It's kind of a terse announcement saying Friday was his last show. They parted ways. They wish him well. We don't know exactly what went on. I mean, my guess is he's feeling some heat after the settlement, the $780-some million settlement with Dominion, in part because of, I don't know, false stories that he was peddling, along with other hosts on Fox News. In addition, I'm sure that the network probably, moving forward, said, hey, look, we can't have a repeat of this, so we've got to rein you in a little bit, and I'm sure he probably didn't like that. He was making about $35 million a year. Your reaction to it, is it going to make you stop watching Fox News? 855-616-1620. Let's start with Mark in Germantown. Mark, you're on WTMJ.
Hey, Jeff, how are we doing?
Good. What do you think?
Good. Well, I was telling the screener there that he's actually my least favorite of the four personalities I watch. I'm an avid Fox guy, just like Fox, because I'm conservative, and mm-hmm. I'm sure they probably, you know, go too far right for some people. But I prefer Jesse Waters, I prefer Laura Ingraham, and I prefer Hannity. Mm-hmm. I always thought that Tucker Carlson was just a little on the goofy side for me.
Yeah,
if that makes any sense. You know, a little bit, I just prefer the other three over him, and I'll continue to watch. Now I'm curious to see what they're going to do with that time slot, because that's a million-dollar time slot right now.
Right. Absolutely. Thanks to call. Absolutely. I mean, that is the prime spot. You know, your 7 o'clock Central, your 8 o'clock Eastern, that's the prime spot. And he was incredibly successful at it. And by the way, he maintained his success. It's not like this lawsuit had hurt his ratings at all. I mean, he was doing extremely well, but one of our texters makes an interesting point. You do stuff that costs your boss $787 million, and yes, there's going to be some consequences. Let's talk to Kelly and Slinger. Kelly, you're on WTMJ. Good afternoon.
Hi, Jeff. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
You're welcome. So Tucker is the only reason I watched Fox. As far as I'm concerned, he was Fox News. But I think that Tucker had sources, I think, that some of the other hosts on Fox don't. And he was able to come up with information that I'm afraid the other ones won't get. So you're getting exclusive stories through Tucker that you couldn't find any place else. as far as I'm concerned, this is a good thing for Tucker. I think he's going to land in a better spot where he has the freedom to, where he's not kept on a short leash.
Oh, let's talk about that for Kelly. Let's talk about that for a second. You have a gig that pays you $35 million a year on the number one, by far and away, the number one cable news channel in the country. If he does land at Newsmax or something like that, do you really think he's going to be? Do you really think he's going to be better off?
Well, let's face it. I mean, Tucker's got more money than you and I can ever dream of.
Exactly,
so
right.
He may not be so concerned about the money at this point as much as getting his information out to his loyal listeners and followers. So, he probably won't make as much. But, again, I think he's just looking for a place that is going to embrace him for who he is and allow him the freedom that he wants.
Yeah, interesting. It's always interesting to see. If you look at the personalities that left big networks, they almost always never do better. I mean, Megyn Kelly, classic example. Megyn Kelly leaves Fox. She ends up at NBC, right, for a couple of years, and that completely bombs. And now, I mean, I know she's floating around, but she doesn't have anywhere near the presence. Bill O'Reilly, who, you know, again, was blown out at Fox News in 2016. I understand Bill O'Reilly still floating around, but let's face it, he's not the dominant force. Will Tucker Carlson go away? No. I mean, I can easily see him, again, landing at maybe one of the smaller news channels, or alternatively, you know, creating his own, you know, Tucker Carlson network or something like that. So he'll continue to have a presence, but let's face it, being on a network like that at Fox and having that prime real estate of, you know, 7 o'clock at night, 8 o'clock at night Eastern and having that audience. Will some of the audience migrate to you? Yes. But a lot of that audience is just they're Fox News audience, and Fox will replace him with someone who won't be Tucker Carlson, but maybe will be that next generation of Tucker Carlson, maybe the next Jeff Wagner, you know, who knows? 855-616-1620. Tonight should be interesting watching both channels. CNN will talk about Tucker Carlson being fired, and Fox News will talk about Don Lemon being fired, but they won't talk about their own. Jeff, it depends on who replaces Tucker. I didn't like Tucker Carlson at first, but as time went on, I started to appreciate that he pushed ideas that were not mainstream, even though I didn't agree with them. Some of that pushing was, I think, undoubtedly, some of that's kind of got him in trouble. Jeff, Tucker Carlson in 2024. I don't think that that's going to happen as well. Jeff, why didn't you mention the fact that there's also a sexual harassment lawsuit by a female producer who worked for Tucker Carlson show? How do you know that that's not the reason he's being let go? Well, I think there's probably all sorts of stuff that's going on, but I think I have no doubt that they are more concerned with, I don't know, the $787 million lawsuit that they ended up having to settle. But I'm sure, I mean, it's the misogyny. That's what kind of did Don Lemon in. I mean, there were all sorts of people who, you know, said he was creating a hostile work environment, et cetera, like that. So, I mean, I think it's all these different things. Jeff Carlson's departure from Fox is a huge blow to the network. I'm a big fan of his work. He evolved in a big way during the Trump administration. Tucker was very confrontational with guests till Trump came along. And I like it. I mean, he's clearly popular. My guess is that part of the audience will follow him, but I don't think it's going to have any significant problems for Fox, assuming that Fox finds somebody who is a quality person and who's smart and who's photogenic and can, you know, again, fit in with whatever the view of Fox News is going to be. Now, let's face it, Fox News is always going to be conservative, and that's what their niche is. And as long as they offer an alternative to the mainstream media, they're going to be successful. They're probably, though, especially after this Dominion lawsuit, going to be looking for people who aren't quite as let's push the envelope here. Or, again, people who, I don't know, look at this and say, if it's one thing to put people on that have sort of whack job theories, it's another thing when you embrace those whack job theories on the air when privately you're saying this is a whack job theory. And that's what got him in trouble with the defamation thing. It wasn't necessarily that a Sidney Powell or a Rudy Giuliani comes on and goes after Dominion. It was the fact that the hosts who didn't buy any of this were then parroting those lines in order to get ratings. That's what created the problems. And I'm sure that's where, you know, Fox's standards and practices moving forward are going to try to rein them in a little bit. And it's also a shot across the bow at other stations, whether it's the CNN or the MSNBCs of the world, that it's one thing to say stuff on the air that you believe. It's another thing to say stuff on the air that you don't believe. Back with more in just a minute. This is Jeff Wagner. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you. Hey, speaking of that TV thing, did you know that you can now watch us? Because we have all our cameras that are working here at our Avenue studio, and we are live streaming the programs. You can see us on the YouTube channel. You can go to our WTMJ website, and you don't even have to download the app. You just click on Watch Live, and you can watch and listen to the shows at the same time. It's kind of interesting because you get the number of people who download the shows on YouTube, and it's over 100 people who will actually download and watch them, and then there's people who just come in and out during the course of the program. We just started doing it for about a week or so. So it's there, and if the people at Fox News want to check me out, okay, well, you can see the cameras in the studio. How cool is that? So very glad to have you with us. Do you ever wonder why so many people just decide to run from the police in Milwaukee County? Ever wonder why that is? Well, I've got a number of theories, but I've got reason number one, and I'll present Exhibit A to you in just a moment. Reason number one why people run from the police in Milwaukee County is because they can. And reason number 1A is that when you run from authorities in Milwaukee County, almost nothing happens to you. Let me give you an example here. And if you follow me on Twitter, it's at Jeff Wagner 620. I've got a link to this story as reported by Fox 6. All right. The second of two Milwaukee men charged in connection to a pair of 2021 Whitefish Bay police chases has been sentenced. All right. Hang on. Tristan Homan, 19, pleaded guilty to fleeing, eluding a police officer on April 20th and was sentenced the same day. A charge of resisting an officer was dismissed as a part of the agreement. All right. The other Milwaukee man, 18-year-old Isaiah Wilson DeBerry, was also sentenced. He was sentenced in October of 2022. DeBerry had pleaded guilty to fleeing, eluding police, as well as driving a vehicle without an owner's consent. Okay, so here's what these two solid citizens have done. Criminal complaints state police spotted two vehicles that appeared to be driving together near Oakland Avenue and Lake Drive shortly before 2 a.m. on November 29, 2021. The vehicles, a Hyundai and a Chrysler minivan without license plates, were speeding up and slowing down. So it's like Lake Drive, Oakland. They're driving together. One of them doesn't have a license plate. Police called for help in an attempt to stop both vehicles, according to the complaint. The first officer did stop the Chrysler minivan. This is the one without plates, and ordered the driver to throw the keys out the window. Instead, the driver sped off, prompting the pursuit. So the guy driving the Chrysler minivan pulls over. The police officer says, throw your keys out. He takes off. All right. Another officer spotted the Hyundai on Cortland Avenue in Whitefish Bay, just south of Hampton, and initiated a traffic stop and running its plates to confirm that this was the car they were looking for. The driver, however, ran a stop sign at Ardmore and began speeding up as it continued to run stop signs through a neighborhood. The Hyundai turned north onto Wilson Drive and briefly lost control before it continued to flee. the Hyundai headed west on Hampton and north on Port Washington Road. So now you're kind of in the Bayshore area, running the light at Henry Clay Street. It crashed into a pole as it tried to turn west onto Silver Spring Drive. So the car is fleeing from the cops. It's trying to get on the freeway, I think, is what's going on. The driver then got out and began running as smoke rose from the Hyundai, ignoring the officer's orders to stop, according to the complaint. The driver, since identified as Isaiah Wilson DeBerry, was arrested with the assistance of a canine dog. The pursuit lasted a little more than 2 miles, and the Hyundai reached speeds of more than 65 miles an hour. Now, you might not think that's a big deal, but this is a residential neighborhood where the speed limit is 20 or 25. All right, the complaint states the Hyundai had damage to the ignition consistent with tampering seen in stolen cars. Hyundai was heavily damaged, and the owner confirmed it was stolen. So you've got one of these yo-yos who is driving a stolen car. Presumably he stole it, and then he's drag racing or screwing around on the roads with one of his buddies. He takes off, and, you know, we're all off to the races. So he gets caught. All right, pursuit of the Chrysler. This is the car that is driven by 19-year-old Tristan Homan. The Chrysler had fled down Hampton into Glendale, the complaint states, at times driving on the wrong side of the road as it ultimately reached speeds as high as 55 miles an hour. Again, it's like 25 or 30 is where this is. It kept moving despite having crashed and lost a tire. At one point, stop sticks were used. It stopped near Hopkins Avenue in Milwaukee, and a driver and the passenger began fleeing on foot. An officer chased the driver, since identified as Homan, on foot before ultimately arresting him. A passenger was also arrested. The pursuit stretched more than 3 miles. Police later spoke to the Chrysler's owner, who said that Homan had permission to use it, but only for work purposes. So you get the idea. You got these two yo-yos who are out. One's in a stolen car. The other is in a semi-stolen car. 2 o'clock in the morning, they're fooling around. The police try to pull them over, and they take off, high-speed chase. After they crash their cars, they decide to run from the cops. Now, you would think, I don't know, in a rational world, that this might be a big deal. But, of course, this is Milwaukee County, and this is where that's just the modus operandi. We don't need to stop for those cops. We're just going to take off. And if we go through a red light and we hit and kill somebody who's, I don't know, driving, you know, with the right of way, well, that's just too bad. So, all right, you've got this picture. What happens to these two? Let me start with the first man. 18-year-old Isaiah Wilson DeBerry was sentenced to 10 months in the this is one of my favorite things too. We no longer call it the House of Correction because we don't want to stigmatize the inmates. I'm not sure I'm supposed to call them inmates. We no longer call it the Milwaukee House of Correction because we don't want to stigmatize the guests at the House of Correction. We now call it the Milwaukee County Community Reintegration Center. Yes, it's the jail, right? But we can't call it the House of Correction. We've got to call it the Milwaukee County Community Reintegration Center because God knows one of the people who has committed enough crimes to get their sorry tales sent to the House of Correction might feel stigmatized if we call it the House of Correction. You cannot make this stuff up. So anyhow, the 18-year-old who was driving the stolen Hyundai, he was initially sentenced to 10 months in the Milwaukee County Community Reintegration Center. You might, if you are listening to this, be screaming at the radio right now going, you can do all this stuff and you get 10 months in the House of Correction or the Community Reintegration Center. Well, okay, if you're screaming now, here's what happens. The judge decided to stay that sentence. I'm sending you to 10 months. And then, sentence suspended, he got 18 months of probation. The other character, this was the one driving the Chrysler minivan who, you know, with the stop sticks and the things out, Tristan Homan, 19, pled guilty to fleeing, eluding a police officer on April 20th, was sentenced the same day. Charge of resisting an officer was dismissed, so we kick that. He was originally sentenced to 12 months in the Milwaukee County Community Reintegration Center. That would, again, be the House of Correction. You're going there for 12 months. Now, again, I understand you might be yelling at the radio going, 12 months, you can do all this stuff? No wonder everybody does this crap, because that's just a slap on the wrist. But no, no, no. Milwaukee County Circuit Judge David Swanson, after initially sentencing him to 12 months, then stayed the sentence in favor of a sentence of probation. Yep, probation. So I'm going to put you on probation. Now, I don't know how that's working out, because if you run this guy's criminal record for Tristan Holman, age 19, it's amazing you can be 19 years old and have as many entries as he has, and I think he's got other problems that are out there. But they put him on probation for fleeing the police and doing all this other stuff. If you wonder why we have these problems, it's exactly this. Because you have people who drive recklessly, who drive stolen cars. They know that when they run from the cops, the chances are they're not going to get caught. They're going to be able to get away if they drive recklessly enough. When they smash up the cars, they run, and half the time, three-quarters of the time, they're able to flee on foot, and the police aren't able to track them down. But it doesn't matter, because when the cops do find them and they prosecute them, you've got judges that aren't going to hold people accountable at all. I mean, seriously, probation for 18 months, probation for 12 months or whatever this is for doing this kind of stuff, and we wonder why we don't get any sort of deterrent. Exhibit 1 and 1A right here. And it's never going to change till judges start trying to take this more seriously and send people to the Milwaukee County Community Reintegration Center, formerly known as the House of Correction. But, you know, what do you have to do to get yourself sent to the House of Correction if it's not this? One of our texters says, Jeff, this is beyond ridiculous. Why even have laws then? If these woke judges actually did their job, crime wouldn't be as out of control. Well, I don't know if it wouldn't be as out of control, but, you know, it would be, at least if you take these people that you know are going to go out and do other stuff. That's just kind of the reality. That's what the statistics show. If you take them off the street for even a little bit of time, at least they're not out there menacing other people. And there's another story, and if you, again, I had a link to this. I put it up yesterday morning. If you follow me, it's at Jeff Wagner 620 on Twitter. But, you know, one of our texters who, you know, is like, well, I can't believe you hate Milwaukee. No, it's actually the opposite. I grew up here, right? I mean, I'm from here. I grew up in Glendale. I've lived here my entire life when my parents moved here when I was a young boy, and with the exception of a couple years away at college, I have chosen to live here. It breaks my heart as to what we have collectively allowed to happen to this community. And so it's not a question of hating Milwaukee. It's actually, I love Milwaukee. I hate what Milwaukee has become in some regards. It's become a place where, frankly, it is just not unsafe. It is not safe to travel in many areas. And I understand there's some people who want to stick their fingers in their ears or put their hands over their eyes and pretend that this isn't going on, but it isn't making things better. And I am infuriated by politicians who come out and, oh, this is terrible. We've had another three people that were killed by reckless driving or, you know, in these senseless acts of violence, and this has got to stop. And then nothing happens, and nobody's held accountable for this, and it gets worse and worse and worse, whether it's people's cars being stolen or people being shot on randomly on the streets or people dying because they had the audacity to get in their cars. And here is one of these examples that has kind of set me off. Capitol Drive. Why anybody would drive Capitol Drive in the city of Milwaukee is absolutely beyond me. They should put up signs saying it is to driver beware. Get on Capitol Drive at your own risk. Now, when our studios were on Capitol Drive, I will tell you, many, many, many of my colleagues, my teammates, tried to figure out everything they could possibly do to figure out how to get to our studios on Capitol and Humboldt without having to drive very far on Capitol Drive, because it's just not safe. Years ago, the police, at least on that segment of Capitol Drive, they always had a motorcycle cop that kind of sat on the bridges by Port Washington Road and would pull people over. That's gone by the wayside. And the further west you go on Capitol Drive, the more dangerous it becomes. And here's the latest example of this. 12 a.m. Saturday night, Sunday morning. A 74-year-old Milwaukee man died at the scene on 67th and West Capitol Drive. So what happens is, I believe, I'm not sure where, I can't tell from the description where the man was, but he's on about 67th and Capitol. The description is, a driver speeding eastbound in the 6700 block of West Capitol Drive crashed into the man's car. So I don't know if he crossed over and hit him head on. I don't know if the guy had the right of way at the intersection. Don't know exactly what happened. All I know, 74-year-old man driving around midnight, 6700 block of Capitol Drive, was hit by a speeding car. The car that hit the 74-year-old man's car caused the man's car, the victim, caused that to hit a pole. And as a result of that crash, the 74-year-old man is dead. So car hits him, knocks him into a pole. He's dead. He's dead at the scene. Then, of course, what happens is inevitably, as night follows day, what happens is the driver of the speeding car, what do you want to guess? What do you want to guess he did? Did the driver of the speeding car stop and call 911 and say, hey, we've just been in this horrific accident. I need you to help me. No, he did what 2/3 or 80 or 90% of the reckless drivers do. He got out of the car, left his car because it was not drivable, and fled the scene on foot. Milwaukee police are still looking for the suspect. So you have a guy driving at a high rate of speed after midnight, causes a collision, essentially causing the death of a 74-year-old man who did nothing except drive his car on Capitol Drive. He is now dead. And the piece of human garbage that caused him to die gets out of the car. It's fled. Police are still looking for the suspect. Will they catch him or not? I don't know. And I presume that if and when they catch him, this will be a situation where maybe some judge somewhere, because somebody's dead, will put the guy in jail. What do you want to bet that when and if they catch him, we find that this is not his first time at the rodeo? I mean, maybe it is true. Maybe this is just, I'm going to wake up today, I'm going to go out, I'm going to drive like a bat out of you-know-where, I'm going to hit and kill somebody, and then I'm going to flee the scene. Maybe it's the first time they did it. Maybe this is just that happened on that day, but I will bet you dollars to donuts that is not the situation, and that when they catch this person, they're going to find that he has had multiple run-ins with the criminal justice system and has probably been put on probation on multiple occasions, because heaven forbid we wouldn't want to send him to the House of Correction or the Community Reintegration Center or whatever we call that place now, because we don't want to make the inmates there, I'm sorry, the residents, feel stigmatized. But this is the type of stuff that happens on a regular basis, and we tolerate it. Well, how do you say we tolerate it? We tolerate it because there's no consequences. We tolerate it because people accept it. We tolerate it because our elected officials, including the judges, don't view this apparently as a big deal, and families suffer. And the only thing right now, it seems to me, is until you get a handle on this, you got to wonder, you know, why would people drive on Capitol Drive? You know, admittedly, this is after midnight, but you have the same thing happening at 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon as well. We have decided to mollycoddle reckless drivers, putting them on probation after they lead cops on a high-speed chase, and then we're surprised when the next time they're driving recklessly, they hit and kill somebody. Somebody around here needs to wake up. How many more people have to die before that happens? Well, 74-year-old man died Saturday night, Sunday morning because of exactly this.
Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's the Jeff Wagner Show. Now, here's WTMJ's Jeff Wagner.
Good afternoon, Wisconsin. Welcome back to the program. Greg Matzek, I asked you to hang around for just a minute, but before we get to what we're going to talk about, I used this phrase during the last segment, and one of our listeners doesn't understand it. I said, I'll bet you dollars to donuts. And the person said, "What does that mean? You'll bet dollars to donuts." Now, I guess maybe it's a generational thing. You've heard that phrase before, right?
I have, but I guess I don't know what it means either. Is the only thing as appealing to dollars donuts?
Well, no. What it means is that, I mean, it means that I'll bet money, and you put up a couple donuts. The idea being that the money is much more valuable than the donuts to be. And so, but of course, now with donuts cost, who knows? You know, that could right. be. I guess it depends on how many dollars you're going to put up. But the general sentiment behind it is, I'm willing to wager something more of value than you are into different positions.
Perceived value, right?
Perceived value, so right.
My kid likes a donut more than she likes her $5 bill.
Right. Oh, ooh.
Well, she's six.
Right. Right. If that keeps up, that you're going to have problems moving on. Okay. You are doing something extremely both fun and exciting. Let's talk about it.
Yeah, so it's the third year that I participated in the MacFun's Ringer event. I'm not a ringer on the golf course, Jeff, but I can hit a golf ball. Errant, often, but I like to hit a golf ball. So we're teaming up with the MacFun here for the annual Ringer event. It's at the Bog on Thursday, April 27th. Weather looks like it'll be nice. And I'm going to try and play 100 holes of golf for the MacFun. And it's third year doing it, and we've been able to raise a lot of money for the Mac Fund and pediatric cancer research, and it all stays here in Wisconsin, which is great. The weather looks great. I bring that up because it was 38 and sleeting last year, and it was a tough go on the golf course, but we got it done. But I'm hoping our fans come to support the mission here, and everybody knows the Mac Fund. It is an outstanding charity, but I thought I needed to have a little skin in the game as well. So you are one of, I think, four people, Jeff, maybe in this building, who have seen me with hair.
Yes, back in the day, yeah.
There are not many. I think maybe a couple of our engineers, maybe Vetrano, and yourself. That might be, maybe Bilstad. I got to go back in my timeline. But that's about it. So my wife has never seen me with hair. My children have never seen me with hair. I'm sure anybody listening to this program, unless we're related or we went to high school together, has never seen me
so
with
hair. So it's
been
about 20 years. Yes. You started shaving your head about 20 years ago?
Yes, I think it was 2003.
Okay.
And I've never attempted to grow it back. However, I do know that hair would grow back. I'm just not exactly sure where.
Sure.
So I'm trying to reach my goal of raising $7,500 for the Mac Fund. And already we're at $5,370, which is great. So we're there. It's kind of the finish line here. If we can get $2,000 and change more raised, I will spend at least a month growing my hair back. And I may go longer. Not that I think it'll look good, but I'll give it a shot.
You don't know.
I don't know.
Now, see, this is interesting to me because generally speaking, when people do this type of stuff, it's if I raise X amount of dollars, I'll cut my hair, I'll shave my head or whatever.
Right.
You're doing the flip side of this. You're going to grow hair.
Yeah, I don't know that many people are able to grow hair after they've taken it off. Maybe that's part of the reason. And I think Mother Nature has influenced my shaving of the head. And again, that was I was 23 years old. I'm 45 right now, so I don't know what's going to happen up there. But I think I'd have kind of a horseshoe thing going on. Nonetheless, I think it would be entertaining to give it a shot. And if that's what it takes for our listeners to throw in $5, $10, $50, whatever it is, I think it'd be great. It'd be a lot of fun to try. So what we've done here, Jeff, is we set up our talk and text line at 855-616-1620 with a very simple keyword. The word golf. If you text the word golf, you'll get your my donation page sent right to your phone.
Okay.
People make it nice and easy. You can go through WTMJ.com, too, if you'd like. Look for all the pictures of me with hair. They're quite funny. Our digital department had fun at my expense. But the easiest thing to do is just text the word golf to 855-616-1620. All the information will get sent to you very safely and securely.
And of course, this is it's like a little fun thing to encourage people to donate. But I mean, this is a wonderful cause that you do this stuff for.
Well, no doubt, the Mac Fund is certainly having two children of my own, and I'm thankful every day for their health. But certainly know that things could change in an instant, and oftentimes for families, it does change in an instant, and all of a sudden their son or daughter is in a fight for their life, you know, before they're even in school. That is gut-wrenching to me. So the amount of money raised, that it all stays in Wisconsin, which is wonderful, supports research. And making progress, yes. I mean, is cancer a done deal? Absolutely not. It likely never will be. But advancements in research have been nothing short of phenomenal over the last 30 years. There's all sorts of numbers that support that. But it has to keep going, right? It can't stop the fundraising efforts for things like the Mac Fund, which has been kind of Wisconsin born and raised, you know, back in the Johnny Mac days.
Okay, so let's talk about the logistics of 100 holes of golf, because I've done similar things years past, not recently. Do you wear golf shoes? I wore tennis shoes when I did it. Do you wear golf shoes or tennis shoes?
So I have golf shoes that are kind of like tennis shoes now.
Right, okay.
Right?
Yeah, it's changed a little
really
bit.
I don't
have
like the spikes anymore.
Okay.
So the shoes that I'm going to wear are, they're good in the wet conditions, if there are wet conditions. And they're also comfortable, like legitimately comfortable. So that I'm with you. Your footwear is very important.
And you get your own golf cart, I assume.
Yes. Now, how much battery life is on the battery? Then you might need a second golf cart.
Now, are you playing with a partner? You know, or do you just go out and play by yourself?
Yeah,
how does it work?
I think there's 18 participants, and I'm going to be teaming up with Gabe Neitzel, ESPN Madison or ESPN Wisconsin, and Stephen Watson from Bally Sports Wisconsin. So the three of us are going to play together. We'll all have our own cart and just sort of meet at the green after we tee off. That's kind of how it works. I typically will attempt my birdie putts and par putts. If I miss a par putt, I'm picking up and going.
Right, exactly.
Right? There are no
bogeys
in this event.
Right, yeah.
you know, and you can just sort of, you don't spend a lot of time hunting for your lost ball either.
Well, and you said you're playing at the bog, right?
At the bog. Looks like a nice day, too, which is good.
Yeah, well, the thing with the bog is there will be lost balls because, I mean, you've got that fescue grass and stuff. So, you know, if you don't hit it straight, you know, a lot of times you're going to be in the fescue.
Yeah, you can find me over there. I'll have pictures taken. Luckily, it's not grown up too high yet. It is, I guess, early enough in the season, but it's a challenge. There's no doubt it's a challenge, and it's a lot of fun to take part in.
Okay, so once again, for everybody who wants to support this wonderful cause and wants to see you grow hair, what's the easiest way to do it?
Right. Text the word GOLF to 855-616-1620. My donation page will be sent right back to you. We already have had some people reaching out about potential matches, which is great if we can get to our goal. And we're about $2,000 away from the goal, and the event is Thursday, so we're trying to do a nice final push here over the course of the next, you know, 2-3 days, and try and get to that total before I tee off Thursday morning.
Okay. Well, as soon as I get off the air, Fran and I put us down for $100. So you're now $1,900 away from
there
the goal.
We go.
So, and if anybody that's listening wants to match the Wagner's $100, that's it. We get 20 people, then you're all there, and it's all set.
There we go. Nice and easy, right?
Yeah, exactly. There's nothing to it. Greg, thanks for doing all that you do. It's a wonderful cause, and hopefully everybody that's listening to us will say, I'm kind of curious. I wonder what he's going to look like with hair.
I'm curious myself.
Well, trust me, it's a completely different dynamic. Now, I happen to be fortunate because I still have most of my hair and stuff at my advanced age. And so I just don't know what I'd look like if I went the other way.
Yeah,
I don't
right.
really intend to find out if I don't have to.
Well, good,
so,
good.
All right. So text the word golf to 855-616-1620. We'll send you all the stuff. And if anybody wants to match the $100 that's coming from me and my wife, we would appreciate that. Greg, thanks a lot.
Thank you so much, Jeff.
Absolutely. Okay, now that is the spirit. This is, I'm never really surprised because I've been doing this here at WTMJ for 25 years, so I know your generosity. But just, so Greg and I are talking, just over the course of the last couple minutes, we have over a dozen people who are already texting the word golf, G-O-L-F, to 855-616-1620 with the idea of again, making a donation. One of our listeners, Steve from West Bend, says Elite Masonry will match your $100, Jeff. Okay, well, that's great, and it doesn't have to be $100, but you know, that's what Fran and I are going to kick in. But you know, $25, $50, $20, whatever it is, it helps. And if we can help Greg get to his $7,500 and help him raise another couple $1,000s, that would be just absolutely wonderful. So if you want the link, all you have to do is text the word golf, G-O-L-F, to 855-616-1620, which is the old National Bank talk and text line. And the MAC Fund is just, it's a wonderful charity. And anybody who's ever dealt with someone who's been diagnosed with cancer knows how your life changes once you get that diagnosis. Let me just put it like this. And when it comes to kids, I mean, no kid should have to do that. No kid. I don't think anybody should have to deal with it, but no child should have to deal with it. And the MAC Fund does just a wonderful job of dealing with that. So text the word golf, 855-616-1620. That's the old National Bank talk and text line. And let's help Greg get to his goal. All right. At the bottom of the hour news, after the bottom of the hour news, we're going to spend about a half hour talking about the decision, the announcement that's going to be made sometime this week. Joe Biden says he's in. And I have a very strong opinion about that, and I will share it with you, and then we will discuss. And it's a position that, candidly, I don't care whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, I'm right and you should agree with me on this one. That's coming up in just about 10 minutes. It was just the strangest story of the day. It's not the biggest story. It's not the most significant story. It's just, to me, the strangest story of the day. And I put it in the category of there's just some things I do not understand. It's a term, and I'm always learning stuff. That's the great thing about doing this job. You learn stuff every day, and there's terms that are out there, and I think, I never heard that term before. The term is Disney bounding. Disney, D-I-S-N-E-Y, one word, bounding, B-O-U-N-D-I-N-G, Disney bounding, as in I'm Disney bound. All right, well, but it doesn't mean I'm going to Disney. Mm-mm-mm. No, that's not what it means. Here's the deal. At Walt Disney World and at Disneyland, they have rules which say that grown-ups can't show up in costumes. They can't dress as the Disney characters. Now, why do they have these rules? Well, there's a couple things, because for the people that do work as characters at Disneyland or Disney World, whatever, there are very, very strict rules. There's things you can't do. You're not supposed to talk, all that sort of stuff. And I think the reason they have these rules is they don't want non-Disney employees showing up in Disney costumes and creating confusion. You know, that you've got, you know, some six-year-old kid that doesn't recognize that it's, I don't know, some 40-year-old man who's dressed up as Pluto or dressed up as Donald Duck or dressed up as Mickey Mouse or whatever and starts talking to them. They don't want that confusion. So the rule is guests age 14 and older are not allowed to wear costumes. All right, that's the rule. Well, apparently, there's a lot of people, a lot of grown-ups, who are upset with that. How dare Disney tell us that we're not supposed to wear costumes? So here is what they do. There are apparently, having been told, these adults, that they can't dress up as Mickey Mouse or Minnie Mouse or whatever. They can't dress up in costumes. What they are doing, it's called Disney bounding. And this is the way it's described. It is a style that encourages Disney fans to dress up in a non-costume outfit that draws on the color schemes, accessories, and even personality quirks of their favorite characters. So in other words, you can't dress up in a Mickey Mouse costume, but you can dress up in an outfit that mimics Mickey Mouse. You know, like you've got the mouse ears and you've got, I don't know, the black t-shirt, the black shorts, and whatever color Mickey Mouse's his shirt would be. That would be it. If it's Donald Duck, you would show up not in a Donald Duck costume necessarily, but you would dress like in Donald Duck colors. And then you would mimic, you know, Donald Duck's personality. You know, that kind of stuff. That's what you do. And there's apparently grown-ups that are doing this. Disney bounding is attracting attention on TikTok. That tells you all you need to know. Picking up over 772 million views and counting on the platform. So you have people, some of the common things, people will dress in clothing combinations like Barbie, like Princess Jasmine, and all sorts of other of the different characters that are out there. I appreciate getting involved and getting into something. I get it. But I'm trying to imagine what it is that motivates, even if you're a super fan, what it is that motivates somebody to go to Disney World, not dressed up as Mickey Mouse, but dressed up wearing Mickey Mouse colors and presumably like the Mickey Mouse hats and things like that. I mean, bottom line is, I understand being interested in stuff, but once you start Disney bounding, once you start dressing up, not in costumes, but in colors mimicking your favorite characters, and then you decide to take on their mannerisms when you go to Disney World or Disneyland, maybe that's a time when your next call should be, well, I don't know, to that psychologist or that psychiatrist, because I'm sorry, I get the fact that you're a fan, but it's just flat out weird. It's harmless weird, but it's just weird. It's like having 20 cats weird. It's just flat out weird. Disney bounding. Learn something new every day. So, very glad to have you with us. And, Charlie, we don't need to save that Donald Duck interpretation because, again, when I'm applying for the Tucker Carlson gig at Fox News, you know, and we put together the highlight reel because now we've got the cameras that live stream this. We don't necessarily need to see the Donald Duck impression. But I think Eric Bill said, I think my Donald Duck impersonation is okay. I think that's a pretty good Donald Duck, huh?
That is pretty good.
Yeah, it was kind of a spontaneous thing. I used to actually be able to speak words, and I think I could if I concentrated a little bit. But it's been a while since I've reached into the bag of tricks and I pulled that out.
If Frank Caliendo can do it, so can you.
Absolutely. Hey, by the way, did you ever go to the Gobbler? You know where
I know exactly where the Gobbler is. I've never been inside.
You have never been to the Gobbler. The Gobbler is, of course, between, you know, Madison and Milwaukee. Johnson Creek, absolutely. You get off the road. And it's been a number of incarnations. It's a circular building. Mm-hmm. And I used to go to the Gobbler from time to back when I was in law school, and we'd go out. If you ever drive into Madison or driving back, we'd do these things at the Supreme Court or whatever, and we'd always stop at the Gobbler, and it was circular, and you'd have turkey. It was a restaurant, but it was circular, and what would happen is there was carpeting all along the walls and the floor as well. It was kind of like, I think, this sort of purple thing. Okay. And there was a hotel or a motel that was attached to it. So the Gobbler became, at least in that iteration, it became famous for, you know, you'd meet people and then you'd go to the hotels and stuff.
Sure.
But it's been closed for years. But there's this couple that has apparently just bought the Gobbler.
Oh, so they're going to bring it back?
They're going to bring back the Gobbler. The plan is, I think there's a meeting this week of the Johnson Creek, you know, the village or the city or whatever. I think it's a village. And what they've applied for, like, a conditional use permit and a liquor license and stuff. But I think they're going to bring it back as a music venue.
Oh, we'll have to make a road trip.
A road trip to the Gobbler. Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure that they're going to do it as a restaurant anymore and stuff. But, I mean, this is it's part of my misbegotten boyhood right there. The Gobbler is coming back. A number of people are texting their memories of the Gobbler, as you might expect, you know. You drive out there. I mean, there's certain things you have to hit. As you're driving out to Madison, you got to stop on the way out. You got to stop at the Pinecone Restaurant, you know, and, you know, buy a sweet roll as big as your head. Absolutely.
Yeah,
no question about it. Their steak and eggs is great. And on the way back, you know, we would always stop at the Gobbler and stuff.
You can see it from the highway.
It from the highway, absolutely. Well, I'm excited about this. Again, I don't think it's a restaurant. It's coming back. I think it's a music venue, but it's exciting. My boyhood is coming back. How about that?
Can you sing the theme songs in there? Gobble, 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 gobble. No?
I don't even know that
one.
Oh,
I'm going to find it.
Okay, all right.
I'm going to find it for you.
There you go. That'll be a challenge. All right, when we come back, can we just be honest? He's too damn old. Stick around. Welcome back. Here's the deal. Joe Biden is going to run for re-election. The announcement is going to come sometime this week. And it's interesting because even a lot of the usual suspects are starting to break bad on him. The New York Times, of all places, had a piece talking about how Biden has had the fewest. Well, here's the way the story starts. In the 100 years since Calvin Coolidge took office, only Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan held as few news conferences each year as the current occupant of the Oval Office. Traveling in Ireland last week, President Biden abandoned the decade-old tradition of holding a news conference while abroad. Then it goes on and on. Despite his press secretary pledging that Mr. Biden would bring transparency and truth back to government, in his first 2 years, the president granted the fewest interviews since Mr. Reagan's presidency, only 54. Donald Trump gave 202 during his first 2 years. Barack Obama gave 275. More than any president in recent memory, Mr. Biden, 80, has taken steps to reduce opportunities for journalists to question him in forums where he can offer unscripted answers and they can follow up. The result, critics say, is a president who has fewer moments of public accountability for his comments, decisions, and actions. Of course he's having fewer news conferences because he can't handle it. Hey, look. Wall Street Journal. Let me start. This is our launching point. The White House is whispering that this week President Biden will announce his intention to run for a second term, though the polls say that even most Democrats hope he doesn't. The public understands what Mr. Biden won't admit, that electing an octogenarian in obvious decline for another 4 years could be an historic mistake. All right. Continues. asking the country to elect a man who is 80 years old and whose second term would end when he is 86 is a risky act that borders on selfish. It is impossible to know Mr. Biden's real physical and mental state because the White House goes to great lengths to hide it. But his decline is clear to anyone who isn't willfully blind. He rarely holds press conferences. His words are scripted as possible to avoid embarrassing stumbles that he nevertheless continues to make. Different people age at different rates, but the risk of an accelerated decline for Mr. Biden is considerable. The chance that he could serve a full second term is hardly assured. That means Americans could be voting for his running mate to take over in a second term, which of now would be Vice President Harris. For Democrats, there is no small risk that Mr. Biden could decline noticeably in the 19 months until Election Day in 2024. In that event, voters on the fence could swing towards a Republican nominee who can at least meet the rigors of office, yet even Donald Trump. Mr. Biden may believe he's the only Democrat who can beat Mr. Trump, but many others also could. And what if Republicans nominate someone else? That is, what if Republicans come to their senses and move on from Trump? GOP voters could decide they don't want to repeat 2020, and a younger GOP nominee would have an advantage over Mr. Biden as the more vigorous candidate of generational change. A younger Democrat would have a comparable edge over Mr. Trump. It goes on and on. Our number, though, 855-616-1620, that's the old National Bank talk and text line. I want to take a step away from politics. This is not about whether you think that Joe Biden's first, 3 years in office has been great, whether or not you think that Joe Biden's first couple years in office has been terrible. That's not what this is about. My premise is he's 80 years old now. If he is reelected, he would be 82 when for his second term. That means he would be 86 on his way out. That's too darn old. It's too old. And you can just tell, you watch Joe Biden, he is clearly in decline. And look, I'm not saying he's unfit to do the job right now, but he walks like somebody who's 80 years old. He stumbles. He has those cognitive issues that are there. And this is just a simple fact of aging. At 80, you can be really, really sharp, but you're not going to be as sharp as you were at 60 or at 40. It's just one of those. It's just one of those realities. And again, if you're a Democrat, doesn't this trouble you? I mean, don't you want to say, okay, look, I think he's done a great job, but we need to find somebody who's younger. Let's figure out who that next generation is. If you're a Republican, all right, this is the ideal chance to say, okay, let's find somebody other than Donald Trump. Whether it's Tim Scott or Nikki Haley or, Ron DeSantis or whoever it might be who is, I don't know, in their 40s or their 50s or even their 60s and present somebody who is, I think, more vigorous. The point the Wall Street Journal makes about the cognitive decline is also scary because we all know people, or at least most of us know people, who you hit a certain age and it's like you fall off the cliff. It's like, okay, you go along, and then all of a sudden there is a huge cognitive decline. A lot of times it happens really, really quickly. And is that really the best choice to elect somebody as the leader of the free world? And again, this isn't politics. It's not. But it's 80 to me is too old. 82 is too old. Ronald Reagan, who was the oldest president during his time, there's no question. And Ronald Reagan was in his late 70s. He was clearly in decline the last couple years of his office. And Joe Biden would be, what, 8 or 10, at the similar point of time, he'd be 8 or 10 years older than Reagan was. He's too old. It is selfish for him to run again. And it is irresponsible, in my opinion, for people to vote for him. And that's why, from the Democrats' perspective, it is troubling that nobody appears to come out and be willing to offer that alternative, because the truth of the matter is, if the Republicans run Donald Trump, he's going to lose. It doesn't matter who runs against him. Trump will lose, and I don't know if the Republicans are going to be smart enough to figure that out. But I am extremely troubled with the idea that somebody could be elected president at the age of 82. He's already showing signs of slippage. Do you want to? Do we want to collectively take that chance? And by the way, I'm not a Trump fan, but yeah, I think Trump is too darn old as well. 855-616-1620. That's the old National Bank talk and text line. He's too darn old. Agree or disagree? We discuss in just a moment. Oh, man, take a look at my life. I'm a lot like- I have several friends who are in their 70s, including people who were in their, let's say, older than 75. They, in many cases, were captains of industry, incredibly successful, ran big businesses and things like that. To a person, when we have this conversation, every single one of them says, I'm not fit to be the president of the United States, because they recognize that there is a certain point where age catches up to you. And I'm not saying that they're necessarily major cognitive decline, but they recognize they don't have the energy that they did when they were in their 50s. And, you know, the mind starts to function in different sort of ways. I don't know that there is anybody who is 80 years old, other than Joe Biden, who seems to think that he should be the president, that person, he or she should be the president of the United States. It is a very, very risky thing to elect somebody who is that old. And again, I apply the same thing to Republicans as well. I'm the guy who argues that there should be an upper age limit. I think it is irresponsible to elect somebody that age for a second term as their president. And I guess I keep hoping that you're going to have some Democrats who recognize that and say, okay, look, here's the deal. You know, we're afraid, and maybe the practical thing is, you know, what if he announces that he's going to run and then starts to show more overt signs of cognitive decline, and then, you know, people really do start to freak out about this more than they already are right now. And the New York Times is making this point. If you think that Biden's not holding news conferences because he doesn't want to, he's not holding news conferences because his handlers are afraid of what can happen, because they see him on a daily basis and they know he has trouble tracking things. And it's not an indictment of Joe Biden. It is a reflection of the fact that we all start to slow down when we reach a certain age. It is why in many big law firms and in many large corporations, they have mandatory retirement ages. CEOs got to be out at 65. Senior partners got to be out at 65 or 68, or maybe in some cases they let people stay till they're 70. But after 70, for goodness sakes, you know, in industry, they start to move people along because they recognize the impact that aging has. 855-616-1620. Let's start with Pat in Milwaukee. Pat, you're on WTMJ.
Hey, Jeff, how you doing?
Good. What do you think?
First of all, I'd like to say I know you're a celebrity and you'll get a lot of hate mail, but you're putting it pretty softly on this condition, because I personally took care of my mom for 12 years that had dementia.
Yeah.
And at the time he was campaigning, I could see it in him. I mean, anybody that's worked with somebody with dementia, you know, they know the signs, and he definitely had it. And it's cruel to do that to somebody. But, you know, the thing is, I got extremely lucky with my mom lasting 12 years. I know three other family members that got it. And normally within a year or two, they can slip in 3 months. All of a sudden it goes to Alzheimer's and then they pass away.
Yeah.
And, and a pet. Mom got.
Yeah,
no,
thank. Yeah, I get it. No,
11 years and died in 2 months.
Yeah, so. Thanks. And again, I don't know that there's clinical dementia, but it's clear. You watch Joe Biden; he's slowing down, and he's, you know, he was on this trip in Ireland, and he's got, you know, his son Hunter with him, and you know, he's not processing questions that are coming in and things like that, and the you know, okay, you're supposed to do this now, Dad, and you're supposed to do that now, Dad, and I'm not saying I don't know that it's a formal dementia, but he's clearly showing some of those signs of cognitive decline. And to your point, you're exactly right. For anybody who's ever been through this, it, like I was saying, it could be kind of like a cliff. You're walking along and then boom, all of a sudden the bottom falls out. And is that really is that the best we can come up with from the Democratic perspective? Again, take out the politics of this. You know, is that the best you can come up with to run the country? A guy who's, you know, 80 some, you know, years old, you know, who was, you know, born during, you know, World War II, right? So, you know, is that the best that we can come up with, or isn't it time to pass the torch to a different generation? And I do think there is a degree of arrogance. I mean, look, I understand it's tough to give up power. I get that. But at some point in time, whether you're the CEO of a big corporation or whether you're the president of the United States, doesn't there come a time when you say, you know, it's time to step back, it's time to enjoy however much time I have left on this world? But 82, 83, 84, 85, 86, I mean, seriously? Let's talk to Scott in South Milwaukee. Scott, you're on WTMJ.
Good afternoon, Jeff. Yeah, to answer your question, my answer is yes, I don't think he should run. Number two, I want the Joe Biden, whatever, who said he was going to be a caretaker president to transition us, whatever, to the next generation. And number three, as voters, what can we do? I mean, because Joe Biden and Donald Trump are being forced on us again. I would rather see a matchup, whatever, and I'll just throw a name out there, Pete Buttigieg and Ron DeSantis.
Yeah,
that would be a much more interesting, lively campaign than Donald Trump and Joe Biden again.
Well, I mean, that is my nightmare. It is my nightmare as a radio host to have to see Joe Biden and Donald Trump again. It is why I continue to believe that at some point in time, Republican voters are going to come to their senses. And I'm sorry for the 20% of you who, there's a poll out. And here's the thing with Trump among Republican voters. His support is it is a mile deep. But it's only a couple feet wide. The people that love Trump, that at 20%, they love him, but it's Donald Trump loses. Donald Trump loses to everybody. I'm sorry if people don't like that, but that's just the reality. Donald Trump is never going to be the president. So the question becomes, are Republican voters going to wake up and recognize that? Or is it going to be another 4 years of Joe Biden or whoever it is that ends up being the vice president if Joe Biden ends up bailing? But so maybe that's going to be the frustration, and maybe you're going to hear the frustration in my voice over the course of the next year and a half leading up into the 2024 elections, because I'm with you. There needs to be different choices. It's time for that generational change that is out there. And I think 78 is too old. I think 86, when you complete a term, is just way too old. And it's just too important a job. Now, for the people that are satisfied with what Biden's doing, one of the things, and I think you can make a strong argument for this, is that Biden really isn't calling the shots, that you've got the advisors that are, you know, pushing some of this stuff that Joe Biden really never supported most of his career. But now it's kind of, oh, that sounds like a good idea. We'll talk about one of those ideas coming up in the next hour of the program. But it is scary for the future of this country. That these are the choices. And for Democrats out there, you should be wanting something different. Again, I don't know whether it's Gavin Newsom. I don't know who the next candidate, whether it's, you know, whether it's the governor of Michigan. I don't know if it's somebody from New York. I don't know where that's going to come from. But isn't it time for another generation that's out there? Don't we need to find somebody younger? And I think that's the case. Jeff, my dad passed away when he was 86. Mentally, he was fine, very with it, but physically, he could never run a country, much less work at all. He took naps every day, all day. Right? God bless him. I get it. When you make it into your 80s, you've earned the right to, you know, take naps and things like that. There's no question about it. Jeff, I do not think he should run. He's just selfish to do that. How about a young Democrat? Well, that's the question. You know, who is out there? Jeff, dumb question. Does an incumbent automatically get the nomination? Can a Democrat run against him? Yes, Democrats can run against him. The question is whether anybody's willing to do that and make this issue that is out there, bring it to the forefront and say, you know, Mr. President, let's say you love what Biden's done. Mr. President, you've had a great 4-year term. You've cemented your legacy. it's time to get off the stage before Father Time inevitably catches up to you. That's the most charitable way that I can put it. But, I mean, I'm looking at these notes. Okay, Biden's going to run again. He can't do press conferences. His aides hide him. He is befuddled. And I'm not saying he is incompetent. I'm not saying he's got dementia right now. But he is clearly showing signs of slippage. And if you were honest, anybody who was honest would look at that. And maybe we say, okay, isn't it time to move on? This is scary that he may be reelected president, period.
The Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue. It's the Jeff Wagner Show. Now, here's WTMJ's Jeff Wagner.
Good afternoon, Wisconsin. Welcome back to the program. Here's somebody who's lucky, and Eric had the news story. A train collided with a FedEx truck Monday morning as the truck drove into the city's Department of Public Works parking lot near Walnut Road in Wauwatosa. No serious injuries have been reported. No serious injuries have been reported. Your vehicle collides with a train. The delivery truck driver sustained minor injuries and was treated by the Wauwatosa Fire Department. No traffic impact as the collision happened on a private crossing onto city property. There is a stop sign and a railroad crossing warning sign at the intersection, but no lights or barrier arms. Cause of the crash is still under investigation. Well, I mean, you want to talk about somebody who's lucky. My guess is there's not too many people that walk away from a train automobile collision. In this case, it doesn't appear like the guy was hospitalized at all. So miracles do, in fact, happen. All right. In the last segment, we talked about, I think, objectively, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, most people, I think, would agree that Joe Biden is just too old to run again. And I think even Democrats, matter of fact, there's a poll out I was just looking at, 48% of American voters say they wish somebody other than Biden would run, and it's because of age. But before you even get to, you know, the politics of it. But understanding that, you know, Joe Biden has taken a hard turn to the left. He's not governing as a middle-of-the-road president. He's been doing all sorts of things, which kind of actually makes you wonder whether it's Biden calling the shots or are there people behind him that are calling the shots. But you've seen a lot of these things. You've seen, you know, his adherence to, you know, the eco-terrorists. And here we want to get people out of cars. So we're going to pass these rules, which will effectively require automakers to stop manufacturing internal combustion automobiles, despite the fact that we're not close to being ready to put everybody into electric cars, or whether it's some of these different regulations that have the potential to force people to give up their gas appliances and things like that. Well, here's another thing that's going on that I think, at least in the beginning, it might be running under the radar, but I hope not. Let's kind of walk into this. You should not buy more home than you can afford, right? Can we just assume that the way a lot of people get into trouble with homes, or they buy homes and the home is too expensive for them, and they can't make the monthly payments, and then what ends up happening is they end up getting foreclosed on or walking away from the place or whatever. And so we want people to be able to buy houses, but you don't want them to buy houses that they cannot otherwise afford. So how are some of the ways we determine, you know, what people can afford? Well, first of all, you have a down payment. And the idea is if you put I think it's pretty standard right now for most people, you put 20% down. So if you're buying a $400,000 house, you know, it's your responsibility to come up with, do the math, let's see, 20%, 80 grand. And the reason why you have to come up with the 20% down is the fact that you have skin in the game. You can't, if you've got that money, you are reluctant to walk away from that because then you're going to lose it. Secondly, it demonstrates that you're in a situation where you've got kind of the financial wherewithal to be able to stay in the house. One of the other things that people look at is, all right, how creditworthy are you? And one of the things they look at is your credit score. If you're behind in all your payments, if you're stretched to the max because your credit cards are maxed out or whatever, and you buy a house that's got a certain monthly payment, nobody is doing you a favor putting you into a house where you're not going to have the money on a monthly basis to make the mortgage payments. Hey, I've got this great house, but okay, you're not in a position to do anything with it. So one of the things that they look at, in addition to what's the down payment, is they look at people's credit score. And the truth of the matter is that that results in some people not being able to qualify for financing for certain types of houses. So it means that maybe you can't buy that $400,000 house. It means maybe you have to buy a $300,000 house or a $250,000 house. But I don't think that that's necessarily that bad. Well, apparently there are people in the Biden administration who disagree with that. There is a new, you might have never heard of these initials, LLPA. LLPA, it stands for Loan Level Price Adjustment. And this is a new rule that the Biden administration has put into effect, goes into effect for loans that close after May 1st, or refinancing that closes after May 1st. It's not something they ran through Congress. It's just something the Biden administration said that they wanted to do. Under the rule, which goes into effect May 1st, home buyers with a good credit score over 680, if you got a credit score of over 680, a good credit score, you will pay about $40 more each month on a $40,000 loan, and maybe more than that, depending on the size of your loan. Those who make down payments of 20% on their homes or more will pay the higher fees. They might say, wait a second, Jeff, what are you talking about? You mean if I put 20% down and I've got a good credit score, I'm going to have to pay more? That doesn't make any sense at all. My producer, Charlie, is looking at me quizzically. Oh, yes. That is what's going to happen, because under these new rules, the Federal Housing Finance Agency, FHFA, says what they're going to do is they are increasing the fees that people with money down and good credit scores will pay. They are increasing your fees. And what they are going to do is they are going to take the money that comes from you and they are going to use it to decrease the fees that people with smaller down payments or with lousier credit scores have. I understand this sounds, this crazy, but that is precisely what is going on. You, if you have a good credit score and you have money down, you will pay an extra fee, and that fee will then be used. So you're paying $40 more a month, $50 more a month, whatever. That fee is then going to be used to take people who, again, don't have as big a down payment or have credit scores that aren't as good as yours, and the fees that they pay for their loans and all, those are going to be reduced. So it will make it easier for people who otherwise wouldn't qualify for the mortgage to get it. And the people who do qualify for the mortgage are going to have to pay more. So under these rules, home buyers with riskier credit ratings and lower down payments are going to qualify for better mortgage rates and discounted fees. And the people who put the money down and who have the good credit scores, you're going to be paying for that. Our number is 855-616-1620. That is the old National Bank talk and text line. One of the Obama-era people who was in this, they say this makes no sense, because essentially that maybe my advice should be to people to tell them to, like, screw up their credit scores, because you screw up your credit score and you are more likely to get lower loan fees than if you had good credit. The Federal Housing Finance Agency director, a Biden appointee, says the fee changes will increase pricing support for purchase borrowers limited by income or by wealth. Well, yes. So in other words, they're going to take people who otherwise couldn't afford that $300,000 mortgage or the $400,000 mortgage, and they are going to make it easier for them to buy that house that they can't afford. And people who do have good credit scores and money down, they're going to be paying for it. 855-616-1620. Look out, my head is getting ready to explode. We discuss in a moment. One of our texters said, Jeff, this is ridiculous. I heard about it last week. They calculate that over a 30-year loan, you will be paying $10,000 more towards someone else's loan. Check the math. Actually, then they sent me a note back saying, no, actually, it's $14,400.
Right.
I am not making this up. For loans that close after May 1st, which I think is going to be pretty much, you know, anybody that's applying for a loan now, you will, if you have a good credit score and you have, you know, all the right stuff, what Brian Wickard talks about, you know, all the right stuff, you're putting 20% down, you are a good credit risk, you will pay higher fees. Higher fees that the government will then take and use it to subsidize loans that are made to people that don't have as much down and that have lousy credit scores. It's just absolutely crazy. And so what we're really doing, I mean, this could be 2008 all over again, because we're subsidizing people buying houses that they otherwise cannot afford. And you, if you're buying your home, you're paying for it. Now, one of the people in the Biden administration says, oh, this is just minimal. Well, $14,400 just at average over the cost of over a 30-year loan. I don't know. Maybe I'm just old school, but I still think 14 grand is a lot of money. 855-616-1620. Let's start with Scott in Waukesha. Scott, you're on WTMJ. Good afternoon.
Yes, hi, Jeff. I don't know how this is not a tax indirectly. And the president has no authority to raise taxes, for one thing. And now we're going to make the buying a mortgage more like our tax code, where you want to do things to minimize fees and that. If my daughter's getting ready to buy a house, I'm going to tell her, well, don't put 20% down.
Right, or screw up your credit rating. Screw up your credit rating. Go run up your credit cards. Don't pay the bills. Yeah. Well, it's just.
And I don't know what we can do about this. I haven't had a chance to call my representatives yet, but the president should have no authority to do this.
Well, not unilaterally. Right. No, Scott, thanks for calling. No, I'm with you. I mean, and again, this, like so many things that Biden's done, like the climate stuff and the car stuff, you're not doing it at Congress. I mean, this is not, or the student loan forgiveness thing. He's just decided to bypass Congress. I'm going to use my executive power. I'm going to tell, like in this case, this weird loan agency that you have, I'm going to tell them that this is what I want them to do. I want them to raise their fees on good credit risks so they pay more, so that we can give money to people who aren't as good credit risks, so we can have them buy houses that they can't afford. What could possibly go wrong with this? And how far through the rabbit hole have we gotten and have we gone where we are now saying, all right, we're going to punish you if you do the right things? 20% down, good credit rating over 680 or whatever, boom, you're going to pay more than somebody who doesn't have as much money down and has a crummy credit rating. Where a number of people are making the point that it's socialism, period. Jeff, I've heard it all now. What a joke. My credit score is a little over 800 because I pay my bills on time. So now they want to penalize me for paying my bills on time? Yes, exactly. Jeff, how in the you-know-what can they do that without it being voted on? Well, that's the issue. Joe Biden is just directing this. He's telling his agencies. And look, here's what it is. It's the whole idea is we want to encourage more home ownership among lower-income type of people. Okay, that's all well and good. So what we're going to do is they couldn't otherwise qualify because of their credit rating or they don't have down payments. But there's a reason why you've got to have a down payment. There's a reason why you need that skin in the game. And if you don't have enough money to do that, well, chances are that you're going to end up, you're not doing anybody a favor by letting some first-time home buyer, you know, buy a house that's beyond their means. That's, you're just not doing them a favor, because you know the statistics say that, you know, there's a good chance that it's going to end badly for everybody. 855-616-1620. Let's talk to Jeremy in Racine. Jeremy, you're on WTMJ.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
This kind of gives me a little bit of a deja vu of the early 2000s, giving people loans that they don't deserve or shouldn't have these loans and mortgages. You know, you're looking at somebody with a low 600 credit rating. Right now, people with outstanding credit is getting 6.5 to like 7.6%. If these people get these loans, these financial institutions are probably going to give them into low teens to mid-teens interest rates on fixed rate 30 years. You're talking going from a $900, maybe $800 a month rental cost to like $1,600 per month. That's including your escrow and everything. These people are going to, they're going to flop on them.
Yeah.
And then we're going to have the same thing that happened in 06 reoccur again, say 2030 from now. You know, it may take some time. And then 2030, boom, everybody who owns a home that used to be valued at 250 or higher
yep.
is going to see their houses drop in value. And you're going to have mortgages yep. that are higher than the value of the home. It's,
yep.
I don't understand why we keep making the same mistake over and over and over again. It just blows my mind.
Yeah, Jeremy, you make an outstanding point, and that's the other shoe that drops, because you're exactly right. What is going to happen when the people who are in homes that they cannot afford, what's going to happen when they start defaulting? The value of those homes is going to plummet, and you're right, exactly right. We are looking at a different version of what happened, because we think we're helping people out by making it easier for them to get a home that they're not going to be able to afford. I couldn't disagree more. Maybe it might be great for a year, but like you say, 5 years from now, 8 years from now, where are they going to be, and what will that do to the overall housing market?
The reason why people with really good credit ratings and make a decent money ain't jumping into the housing market is because they know they're paying really high interest rates. So the only people they have left are to go for the bottom feeders in regards to credit rating, because they need to boost the economy by selling these homes. So it's like, okay, people with 800, well, it's not a good time to get in the market. Well, how do we get people to buy houses? Let's figure out a program to get people who can't really afford a house, but we'll just lower the standards a little bit, give them a little candy, and we'll get them into these starter homes right off the bat, and here we are.
Right. Now, thanks for calling, Jeremy. And to get the money to do that, what we're going to do, and one of our previous callers referred to it as a tax, okay, fee tax, whatever you want to do. But to do that, what we're going to do is we're going to stick it to the people that are doing the right thing, the people that have paid off their credit card bills or are making their payments, the people that have the 20% plus down payment. We're going to stick it to them so we can put other people into houses that they can't afford. It is just, again, my head starts to explode on these type of things, and people say, well, you know, why do you hate poor people and things like that? This is just a way to help some people, you know, get houses. No, it's a way to help people get houses that they can't otherwise afford. And that's the underlying problem. If you can't afford the house, if you can't afford the car, you shouldn't buy it. You should buy something that is within your means. Period. You don't do anybody any favors by doing this, but it's especially cruel to go after the people who've done all the right things and say, we're going to stick it to you. And that is precisely what the Biden administration is doing yet again. So Mike Spaulding, you know, I often say, you know, my head is getting ready to explode. And that's one of my phrases. Well, now that we are live streaming, you can watch us by going to like Watch Live or like YouTube and stuff. Sure. That is perhaps an added incentive, because now people can tune in to see if my head actually does, you know, explode.
It's performative as much as it is anything else.
Absolutely. Yeah. Just never know when that could actually happen. But now you could watch it live. How about that? So I was thinking about you this weekend.
Good things, good thoughts.
Well, I just remember, like, we was the recurring story last fall about your dryer, because for people who might remember, and like what had happened is my clothes dryer kind of went on the fritz, and I found a guy to come out and ended up cost a few $100, but ended up fixing it. You had a very similar sort of problem. You decided to self-diagnose it.
Yes.
Take the whole thing apart. Mm-hmm. Order a part, like over the internet or whatever. It came in, then you put the whole thing back together, and It didn't work.
Yeah.
So you ended up buying a new dryer,
yes.
right?
Yes, we did.
Okay, so
works great.
Right. Well, okay, so our dishwasher is I assume it's about 20 years old. It came with the house, you know, and so it's not dead, but it's starting to die. And my wife actually informs me of this as I'm getting ready to walk out the house to go to the baseball game on Friday night. So she said the dishwasher's not working right. And what it is the there's like five settings, like heavy duty wash, normal wash, China, and then two others. Those three don't work. The buttons, you push the button on the control panel, it doesn't work. You can still do it on like light wash or rinse or whatever. But my reaction is, okay, let me reset it. I go down the basement, throw the circuit breaker, you know, cause sometimes it can reset, but it's a 20 year old dishwasher. So I reset it, doesn't work. So clearly there's something there's something wrong with the circuit board or something like that. That's my thing. And I'm sitting there and I was actually thinking about you with the new dryer. And I'm like, okay, I can call somebody. It's going to be $200 to have them come out to just even look at it. And then it probably, my self-diagnosis, it's going to need one of these new circuit boards. And that's going to be a few $100. And it's a 20. And then so am I going to put $500 or $600 into a 20-year-old dishwasher? And so thinking of you, Saturday morning after I went to the gym, we ran out to the appliance store and brand new dishwasher, top of the line, installed like $1,300 or whatever. It'll be installed a week from tomorrow.
Smart move.
Well, yeah, it was just kind of like, okay, it just, well, especially with these ones that have been, you know, I mean, it's had a wonderful life. We got a lot of service out of it.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just like, okay, $500 or $600 to fix it, I'm sure, and I'm sure that's what it's going to be. And some of our listeners will probably text in and say, no, it's a simpler problem. No. This is kind of it, you know, $500 or $600 to fix it, or a brand new one with a warranty for $1,300 and they deliver it, take the old one out. And
well, yeah. And there's a chance that the guy comes out and looks at it and goes, not worth me fixing it anyway, but you're still going to get the $200 charge. You
absolutely.
Know? So, yeah.
Well, right. Plus it's now you have a brand new dishwasher that will presumably last 10 or 15 or 20 years. And you don't have to worry about it anymore. So I was thinking of you. Do I call the guy to have it fixed? Nah, you know, cause even though if they can fix it, I'm still, he might even say, yeah, you'd get it. It's not worth it anyways. So I was thinking of you next Tuesday, guys are coming out and replacing the dishwasher.
How are you able to send us photos?
Yeah, that's how my life has become. This is the exciting level of my life. Hey, we bought a new dishwasher on Saturday, but I was happy.
That's
solved the problem.
It's the little things.
It's the little things. Absolutely. Speaking of the little things, I know probably everybody else in the country has talked about this. I haven't yet. I've got some friends who all they drink, or at least all they drank, was Bud Light. And they're questioning their decision. We'll talk about the latest controversy involving Bud Light. Stick around. People are sending me dishwasher fixes. No. That ship has sailed. Buying a new dishwasher. I've actually already paid for it. Made the arrangements. 20 years old. It's just time to move on. Thank it for service and just kind of move on. Don't even want to think about it again. All right. Spuds McKenzie. Just Charlie, you cannot. Do you remember Spuds McKenzie? Do you know what's when I say that?
That was like a dog, right?
Spuds McKenzie. A fictional dog. It was the original party animal. That was the thing. And Spuds McKenzie was a bull terrier that was used in an extensive advertising marketing campaign for Bud Light. He made his first appearance during Super Bowl ads in 1987, and then they used him for a few years. Spuds McKenzie, it became kind of controversial because there were some people thinking, it's encouraging alcohol consumption because it's this cool little like fictional dog that people want to emulate. They want to be like Spuds McKenzie, and it's encouraging, you know, kids to drink like, you know, kids need to, you know, more incentive, like a 17-year-old needs more incentive to want to get a beer and stuff. But anyways, it was a very, very, well, somewhat controversial. It was a very, very successful ad campaign by Bud Light. Bud Light has had many very, very successful advertising campaigns, as has Budweiser. You know, they got the Clydesdale and all that sort of stuff. And so, in general, I think they've had a lot more hits than misses. I never understood the Budweiser frogs, but people like the frogs. I never got it, but that's okay. People liked the frogs. I still kind of like the horses and things like that. Well, Bud Light has stepped into it big time, and you perhaps, you know, seen this story. The brand manager, or one of the vice presidents, their vice president of marketing, her name is Alyssa Heinerschneid. She's the one that decided, we have a problem with Bud Light. Our Bud Light drinkers are too old. And so what we need to do is we need to figure out a way to expand the appeal of the brand. You know, we need to reach out to new generations and figure out a way to bring, you know, other people into this. So her idea was, let's partner with transgender actress and comedian Dylan Mulvaney. And She has risen to prominence in the last, you know, couple years. And so what Bud does is they say, okay, we're going to use this transgender performer. We're going to use her as a spokesperson, and she's going to be one of our influencers. And so what they do is they, you know, have an advertisement, and they send, you know, Dylan Mulvaney, they send a number of cans of Bud Light with her picture on it, and she's going to be, you know, this influencer. And the idea was that this vice president of marketing for Bud Light said is, look, I want a campaign that's truly inclusive and feels lighter and brighter and different and appeals to women and to men. So that's what we're going to do. And that's what they do. Well, it turns out that there is this huge backlash that starts after that, because there's a lot of regular Bud Light drinkers. And again, it tends to be older, and it tends to be a predominantly white audience. But the fact is that these older Bud Light drinkers don't necessarily identify with the transgender, you know, actress who's now being sponsored and being used as a spokesperson. Now, I get that they thought that Bud Light needed to be more inclusive, and were concerned that their fratty image was out of touch, but their response was, okay, we want to expand our brand, so this is what we're going to do, and this is what we're going to use as our spokesperson. Well, for every Bud Light drinker they might have brought in by this, they've lost dozens of Bud Light drinkers, because a number of regular Bud Light drinkers thought, okay, if this is how you're going to market this, this is not who we are, and you're losing sight of who your original audience is. Well, it now turns out that the vice president of marketing who came up with this idea, she is now on an indefinite leave of absence, because this is not worked out well, very well. This has kind of gone the way of, like, remember New Coke, when Coke decided, here, we're going to come out with New Coke. And, of course, that didn't play out very well. Our number, 855-616-1620. That's the Old National Bank talk and text line. Here's my question to you. I mean, did Budweiser get this really wrong? I mean, I understand their goal was they want to reach out and they want to try to, I don't know, make Bud Light appealing to a new type of audience or whatever, or even a new generation. But if you do that, can you just ignore the older generation that you have, your core beer drinkers? I mean, I just think that this was a staggeringly bad marketing decision. It might be certain products that this is the way to try to expand them. But in this particular case, my guess is the vast majority of the people that are drinking Bud Light now, they are not going to relate to this particular influencer, spokesperson, whatever. Bud Light would have been much better off bringing back Spuds McKenzie or the Frogs or something else. 855-616-1620. All right, was this a bad decision, or is this just an indication of, well, maybe it's those Bud Light drinkers who have a problem with this, and that's not, it's their problem, it's not Bud's problem. 855-616-1620. And I guess my comment would be, if you alienate a portion of your audience, it becomes your problem. 855-616-1620. That's the Old National Bank talk and text line. Yeah, that this... And it's not just the transgender stuff. The particular influencer they chose, you know, Dylan Mulvaney, it is odd. It's an odd choice on a number of different levels. But, I mean, it's still the brand is taking a hit because of this. And the people at Budweiser don't seem to understand what it is that they did wrong. And I'm like, man, you want to talk about sort of tone deaf and not understanding your audience. Vicky in Rome, Wisconsin. Vicky, you're on WTMJ.
Hi, Jeff. Jeff. I was just telling your phone answerer, I think their marketing is all wrong. I think it's too in your face. I personally, if you were asking me for advice, I would say something, yeah, supportive of differences, all kinds of differences, but not so specific. You know, we don't need pictures and things like that. I think their differences can be much more general.
Well, I think it is. I mean, it's just, thanks for calling. Rome, Wisconsin, for those of you who don't know, it's Adams County, Lake Arrowhead, one of the great golf courses in the state of Wisconsin. I mean, here's the deal. I mean, see, here's what I think was so insulting to the people who are currently Bud Light drinkers, and that's, you know, Bud Light, I think, is an inclusive brand that does kind of like bring people together. It's a nonpartisan alcoholic beverage. Democrats like it, Republicans like it, and the Wall Street Journal has a great point. They say it should stay in that lane rather than alienate customers in the name of inclusion. Now, the guys I play golf with on Sunday are diehard Bud Light drinkers, and we haven't been able to get a Sunday golf game in. Maybe this Sunday it's going to happen. But I haven't talked to either one of them saying, hey, you're still drinking Bud Light. But I know that they are not going to relate to this particular marketing campaign. You do wonder what did they think was going to happen. Jeff, the Bud Light fiasco brought back memories of the Harley-Davidson decision to book Elton John for the 100th anniversary celebration. Yep. Jeff, I guarantee Bud didn't have anybody over 35 in their focus groups. They weren't appealing to their target audience. Jeff, these pivots in branding or audience targeting don't just happen overnight. Months were spent in this change. Additionally, the macro light category has been shrinking every year. They needed to do something because Bud Light was turning into Oldsmobile. Remember what happened to that brand? And marketing execs are paid to be risk takers. This one isn't working out in the short run, but maybe it will in the long run. Nah, I just don't, I guess, I mean, time will tell. My guess is Bud Light, and you saw that with his marketing VP being put on, like, well, she's on a leave of absence. My guess is Bud Light is going to try to forget about this particular marketing foray just as quickly as they can, kind of like Marquette University. Remember when they were changing the name, they decided we can't have the Warriors anymore, so they wanted to become the Marquette Gold? Remember how long that lasted? Every once in a while, you got to just recognize you've made a mistake. Stop digging that hole, fill in the hole, climb out, declare victory, and move on.